Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. In 1957, Albert Ostman recounted a story that happened to him back in 1924. He was a Canadian prospector who reported he was abducted by a Sasquatch and held captive for 6 days. After traveling many miles in my sleeping bag, finally, the beast had set me down.
Then he dropped my pack sack. I could hear the cats rattle. Then I heard chatter, some kind of talk I didn't understand.
Albert Ostman was able to escape the ordeal and shared his amazing story with John Green.
Five, five, four, four, three, three, two, one, one.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
Sir, what were you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sir? Gia!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you this evening. I'm going to be speaking with Mike, who is from Idaho, and he had a strange encounter, probably one of the strangest encounters I've heard, but it's a fascinating encounter when he was hunting, and we'll get to that here in a moment. If you've had an encounter, shoot me an email, wes@sasquatchchronicles.com, and if you get a chance, check out the website, sasquatchchronicles.com. Next week, I will be tackling the Albert Ostman story, and Bob Garrett has agreed to come on the show and share his thoughts on the story, so look for that next week. Well, I want to welcome Mike to the show. Mike, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I appreciate it.
And if you would, Mike, kind of give us some background on yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then if you would, just walk us right into the encounter.
When the sighting actually occurred, it was in the fall of 1986. I was 23, and I just got out of the Marine Corps. I did my service for 3 years, and I was in excellent condition at that time. I used to run cross country for the fun of it. One other thing I want to mention before I tell the story is I would not hunt with hunting boots. When I used to go hunting, I used to hunt in knee-high moccasins so I could move around quieter and faster. And my story is that one day my uncle asked me if I wanted to go elk hunting. I never turned down a hunting trip. He told me we were going to go into a new area. There were six in our hunting party, and we split off into two-man teams, and we agreed to meet back at camp at about 5 p.m. My cousin and I decided to hunt up one of the ridges on the far side of this meadow. My uncle and another hunter went on the ridge one over from us. We didn't have any luck seeing any game that day. The two groups met back at the meadow and talked about hunting back to the camp. And as we was doing it, we went through a draw, and we came across a structure. And this structure looked like a slash pile to me that loggers leave behind. But my uncle said, these logs haven't been cut by man. I said, so? He replied, there's no saw marks, no axe marks, no hatchet marks. Then my uncle said, where's the stumps? We looked around, and the closest stump was about 50 yards away. This log structure stood 8 feet high and 30 feet in around. The logs in this pile were green, and there were 6 to 8 inches and probably 10 to 20 feet long. There was a 2-foot opening at one end, and nobody wanted to brave and crawl in and look around. And my uncle said, do you smell that? It was a musky smell. I thought to myself, what died? Shortly after the smell, I thought I heard a woodpecker, and my uncle said, that's not a woodpecker. I said, what? My uncle replied, that's rocks being slapped together. It was like we were being watched.
I wanted to ask you a question before we go on about the logs. Now, were the logs just broken off?
They were. It was kind of like the picture I showed you, or I sent to you about the small one. That was just a small picture I sent you of that one log.
So you're looking at this log structure. You smell kind of a musky smell.
I did. It was nothing like I'd smelled before. It seriously made me think of something that died out there. You know, when you come across a dead carcass or something. But we didn't see anything at that time.
And then what happened next?
Then what we did was we went back to camp an easier way, and as soon as we got back to camp, we told the other hunters in our hunting party what we came across out in the middle of nowhere. And after doing that, we had something to eat, and we went inside of a sheepherder tent to play some cards that evening. And as we was playing cards, my uncle was sitting by the door and stuff, and I thought he was playing a trick, and he said, quiet, listen. We all quieted down, and we tried to hear what he was hearing, and nobody did. So after about 5 minutes, we went back to playing cards, and I think another 5 or 10 minutes went by, and he again said, quiet, listen. But this time, he started to point towards the ceiling of the tent where the lantern was hanging. The lantern was swaying, and the next thing we know, the whole tent falls in on everybody. And since my uncle was the closest one to the door, the flap, he unties it, and he's yelling for us to get out. And one by one, we were all grabbing for flashlights and weapons, and I just happened to grab a flashlight and a hunting knife. So we all exited the tent. He said spread out. We all spread out around where the tent had been standing. And this is at about 10:30 at night. It was a full moon, no breeze. There was an amber of a fire still going a little bit. I didn't turn on my light at first so I could get my eyes used to being in the dark. But I stepped around where the back of the tent was, and I was standing by a tree. And as I stood there, I could hear something. It sounded like something walking through dry leaves. And I was trying to take a head count on where the other people in my hunting party were. And they were all behind me. But I heard something. So I step out, turn on my light, and thought, whatever I heard, I'm going to see. I flashed my light around. I couldn't see anything. And then my cousin walks up behind me, puts his hand on my shoulder, leans in. He goes, "What's that in front of you?" And I go, "Where?" He takes his hand off my shoulder, still standing behind me, grabs my hand that has the flashlight and says, "Don't move," while he's standing behind me. He reaches around with his flashlight, and I'm thinking, "Why are you standing behind me?" And he waves his flashlight in front of me. As he does this, this thing was probably 30 feet in front of me, standing on two legs. It takes two steps sideways, and it drops to all fours. My cousin goes, "What is that?" I go, "I don't know." He goes, "That's not fur." And I'm still trying to fixate on what it actually was. Because back then, we never talked about Bigfoot, never really believed in it. But there's something right in front of me that makes me wonder what's going on. And as we're talking about it, in a matter of 10 to 15 seconds, as we're looking at this thing, I'm fixated on the foot. To me, it did not look normal because it was hinged in a way that reminded me of a medium-sized dog. This thing sprang on all fours down an old abandoned logging road like a gorilla or a frog. Both arms moved in adjacent to each other. And when it sprang to take off, my cousin goes, "Let's follow it." We knew the direction it was headed. At that time, I wasn't scared of it. For some odd reason, I had in my mind that it was more scared of us than we were of it. And as I chased this thing down this old abandoned logging road, it made me feel that I was in control because everywhere I put the flashlight, it tried to avoid it. And it would go one way, I put the flashlight the other way. It would go the other way. I got so close to it that I could see the hand, the fingers, the biceps, the triceps flex. I saw the flat back. It was like if I was on a football field chasing a quarterback, I could have tackled it or I could have jumped on the back. But my cousin wasn't as fast a runner as I was back then, and he started yelling, "Stop, stop." And I yelled back, "Why?" He yelled, "Stop again." So I break off the chase. And I had my flashlight still pointed in the direction that Bigfoot was headed. My cousin finally caught up with me. And I go, "Why'd you have me stop?" He goes, "Think about it." I go, "Think about what?" He goes, "Do you hear it?" I go, "Hear what?" He goes, "We should be hearing something running out through the timber." And I go, "What?" He goes, "Think about this." I go, "Think about what?" He goes, "Wolves lure domestic dogs into the forest so the rest of the pack can pounce." And talk about an eerie feeling come over me. I go, "Maybe we should head back." And so we went back to camp. And everybody wanted to know what we had taken off running after. Because nobody else saw it, but they heard it, they said. I seriously believe at that time I got PTSD from it. I wasn't scared until after I got back to camp. But I'm going to tell you, they're big, they're hairy, and they're out there. I've had more than one occurrence. I now, on different times, take coworkers and friends into the area to show them the different things I've come across.
Let me ask you, Mike, when you go back to camp, what is the conversation like?
At first, my cousin, all he wanted to do was talk about it because he couldn't keep up. But he was laughing at me going, "How much closer do you want to get?" Because as I was running along next to this thing, What was going through my mind is, what do I do now? I'm so close, and all I got is a flashlight and a hunting knife. And what was actually in my mind was, do I jump on the back? I go, that would be the foolish thing I ever do. This thing was massive. And like I said, it was 30 feet in front of me when I first saw it standing. And this thing looked to be between 600 to 800 pounds.
Were you able to get a look at the creature?
It seriously looked like what reminded me of a very large man in a ghillie suit when I first looked at it. And I was thinking to myself, what is somebody doing out here at night in a ghillie suit? But when it dropped to all fours in spring and it ran like a gorilla, I go, that's no man. There's no way, you know.
What, were you able to get a look at the face?
There was too much hair. I saw no eyes. I saw no teeth. But I can tell you, I saw the hand. I saw the fingers. I saw the triceps and biceps. I saw the foot. I see that you posted my letter and my fast little sketch of what I actually saw, and I do appreciate it.
Yeah, when they dropped all fours, it's really, you kind of nailed it, and I never heard anyone say it like a hinge, but you're right, the foot and the just the way they're built, it's almost like they're just as natural on all fours as they are up, almost more natural on all fours than they are up walking around. I mean, they just, it's hard to explain. I know what you mean, and that picture gave me the creeps when I saw it. Your drawing. What made you give chase?
Like I said, I wasn't scared of it, even though it was standing 30 feet in front of me, just because I didn't see no teeth. And I thought at the time when I saw it that close that I've got five other hunters here with weapons that have my back. And since I just got out of the Marine Corps, I was still gung ho. I didn't feel that I couldn't do anything I wanted to. I guess I was a little bit naive to think that way, but back then, Bigfoot wasn't talked about a whole lot.
Right. You're just thinking at the time you're chasing this weird creature down?
I had no idea what it was until I could actually start to see the hands and fingers and stuff on how it actually ran on the knuckles. It didn't run palm down. It ran on knuckles. And I could see the fingers and the thumb and how it looked. It kind of reminded me of a orangutan on how their fingers are longer and stuff. When I actually could see it in movement. But the funny thing about it, where it was avoiding me, making me have maybe a false sense of security of being in control, it was doing everything it could to avoid the flashlight. So I was going from point A to point B as it was going like around little sapling trees. It wasn't going over stuff where I thought there shouldn't be any reason why this thing couldn't go in a beeline straight down over a hill, but it wasn't. And I knew I wasn't too far from a meadow that I knew very well that was probably 400 yards wide and about 2 to 3 miles long that would open up, and it was a full moon that night. So I felt that I could see everything that I needed to see. And I really didn't start getting really nervous and stuff until my cousin started talking about the wolves leading domestic dogs away from their homes. And that was, I think, when it hit me the hardest. Because when you see one for the first time, you don't think they're really there, and then you start having to think, if there's one, there's going to be more.
Yeah, and I think your cousin hit it right on the head with his impression of what was going on. Kind of like coyotes. Coyotes do the same thing. One will kind of come in wounded, and it'll lead a dog into a certain area where the rest of the pack can get it. And, you know, these creatures, I'm sure you know now, Mike, you probably didn't know at the time, but they could easily outrun you. I mean,
without a doubt. I think what was in my favor that night, other than being at the right place at the right time, was they're top-heavy. And this was a race downhill. And even though it was downhill, gravity carries very good. And I stand 6'1". And I used to be a cross-country runner, like I said, and all I did was stretch out my legs. And seriously, I had to go back about 2 years ago and pace off how far I actually ran, and I estimated that I ran over 400 yards at a full-out run after this thing.
When you went back to camp, you know, your uncle had mentioned the smell. He had mentioned a bunch of things prior to this encounter. What did he say about the whole thing, about you running this thing down?
He thought it was a joke. They didn't want to believe. Even though things happened the way they did, what got him the most was the stakes on the tent. The reason the tent came down was the two corner stakes were metal. They were pulled out of the ground. And these stakes, we had pounded them in the ground with an axe. I seriously believe that night that we were being played with. We wanted to see what we would do and stuff. Because later on that evening, I didn't tell you, after we got back to camp and got the tent back up and went to bed, I heard the strangest thing I ever heard before. And I heard probably 12 to 16 coyotes. I've never heard that many at one time. Yelping and baying and howling all over the meadow. And at times I wonder if it really was coyotes, because I've heard of other people saying they've heard Bigfoot supposedly sound like dogs or coyotes sometime. And I go, could have been? Maybe. I don't know. I didn't see that, you know. I can only tell you what I saw.
Yeah, one of the things that I've come across is whenever you're going into an area that is supposedly kind of a hotbed of activity, late at night, you'll always have coyotes. For whatever reason, you'll always hear coyotes. Almost in every situation I've been in where there's been vocalizations or there's been mainly vocalizations off in the distance, first you'll hear the coyotes go off, and then you'll hear the vocalization, and then the coyotes shut up after that. And I don't know what the correlation there is between Sasquatch and the coyotes, or even if you did hear coyotes at night. When you first came up to the creature, did it vocalize from the beginning of your encounter to the end? Did you ever hear any sort of vocalization?
As far as when I saw it standing?
Yeah, saw it standing or running, or did you ever
nothing,
hear?
Nothing. As I was running and getting closer to this thing at a full-out run, I purposely tried to lean in to see if I could hear anything, as I used to do when I ran track or cross-country, to see if the other person's panting, so I could use that to my advantage. This thing wasn't panting. This thing wasn't making noise. And I also think that at times it didn't know what was chasing it. I don't think it heard me. All it was trying to do was avoid the light.
Yeah, that's a fascinating, fascinating encounter. And I know you've gone back to the area. You've gone there several times. What makes you keep going back?
I show pictures of the different tree structures or log structures to coworkers and friends, and some of them will intrigue people and stuff. And pictures only do so much, but when you are actually there and see it in person, out of 9 people I've taken in there, each one of them have come out and say, there's something strange going on here. Because like the picture I showed you, or all the pictures I've given you, as far as that fence structure and stuff that has probably 9 different logs, they look woven. And you can tell that these logs are nothing small. I can show people hundreds of these things within a mile radius. It is unreal. And it intrigues me because sometimes I go back in there and I find new ones and stuff. I don't know why they're there. I don't know the actual purpose of on the different things, on how they put things. But the last time I was there, I was playing, and there was a stump. I placed some marbles that my daughter had given me. And I just picked some marbles at random as far as color-wise and put them on a stump, and I took a picture of it. And this was in July of this year, and I went back in August with another group of people and stuff. And when I came across the stump, I started laughing. And the people that I took in go, what are you laughing at? And I actually had a picture of what I did with me of July. And I go, my marbles are gone. And they look at me and go, you sure you got your marbles? And I go, no, I placed marbles on this dump, and they're gone. They go, really? So I showed them the picture, and I go, oh, here's one, and it happened to be at the base of the stump, and I go, oh, it probably just rolled off. So I picked it up, and I put it on the stump. One of my coworkers goes, oh, here's another one. It's about 8 feet away, placed dead center on a piece of bark. And another person goes, oh, a squirrel probably put it there. I go, okay, well, I'll buy that. I had another friend goes, hey, look here. I go, what? He goes, did you look at the stump? I go, no, why? It's empty. He goes, no, it's not. One of the marbles that I placed there was embedded in the stump 3 inches. We had to use a pair of pliers to pull it out. There wasn't a mark on the marble in any way, but it was embedded in the stump. And I thought, that's pretty cool. I want to see a squirrel do that again. So what I did is I took some more marbles and just put them on the stump, just at random as far as color-wise, to see what would happen the next time. So when I go back again, I'll check them out.
Yeah, that's strange about the marbles. I wanted to ask you, was that your only sighting of the creature? You've been going up there for years and years and years.
In that area, no. I had one other sighting of probably a 3 to 4 foot one. It surprised me when I saw it. I think the smaller ones are even faster than the big ones because I had seen it very, very, very short time. And it was a color of a fox as far as an auburn color. The only reason I say it was another one is all I really saw was an arm, a hand, and it was gone. I mean, within a blink of an eye, this thing was nowhere to be found. I could tell you the direction it went, and that's about it. I even tried to chase this one, and I couldn't do it. But shortly after I tried to chase it, because my son didn't even see it. He was with me at the time. He was 16. And he goes, Dad, I want to try something. I go ahead. What he wanted to try was do some wood knocking. He knocked maybe one time, and we sat there for about 2 minutes. And sure enough, he got a response. And when that happens for the first time, thinking it's a joke, it's not a joke. It can happen. And another time we were in the same area, after him telling me that he wanted to try something, I go, I want to try something. And what I tried was what I call a huff, and I just more or less went, huh. There was no echo to my voice. It was just a lot louder. And about a minute later, I got a response. But the response sounded like it was about a half a mile away. It was a roar. It was kind of exciting the first time. And then after it did it, I waited a little bit. I responded back. Wait a little bit. It'd respond back. But each time it roared at me, it'd get a little closer. You could hear that the volume was getting louder, like it was moving closer to us. And after about 15 minutes, we had another one pop in. The same roar, but a different location. And this one was quite a bit closer. Got me to the point that I got the feeling that we weren't wanted in the area, so we left. But yeah, I've been chased out of the area more than once. They let you know when you're not welcome.
Yeah, you might be careful. You might want to be careful chasing these things down, man. Especially a little one. You know, you chase down a cub.
Exactly.
And you're going to be in some big trouble if mama's around. You're going to be in a lot of trouble. You know, like
I thought about that afterwards. That doesn't go through your mind at first. Just like the first time I ever saw tracks, because the first time I ever saw tracks was in snow. About 5 years ago. Because even after I had my episode of chasing one, we went the next day to try to find the tracks of the one I chased. We couldn't even find it. The ground was too hard. But the ones me and my son followed was in new snow, and they were fresh. And he wanted to follow them as far as they could go, and I go, we're not doing this. We're not prepared for this. I mean, we will do it another day, but not today. And the tracks we've seen were probably 16 to 17-inch ones.
So they're definitely up there. They're still alive and well in the area.
Oh, definitely. And it's a neat feeling to know that there's something there. And they, like I said, they will let you know if they're in the area. I think what I've stumbled across is a migration path or some kind of game trail that they like to use. I don't purposely try to go find them. I like to see what they build because I know they'll come find you if they're in the area. And they travel a lot. I've seen different structures in probably an 80-mile radius. And that's why I get intrigued about it on taking friends and coworkers up there and stuff and saying, I want you to explain to me why these structures the way they are. And these are no little trees. These are probably 30 to 40 foot high, as live as any, or as big as any tree living next to it. But they're just like they're ripped out of the ground. They're splintered at the bottom.
Yeah, and with your permission, Mike, could I post some of those to the website?
You're more than welcome.
Yeah, you know, when I first looked at them, and I've always been very skeptical of tree structures, but, you know, when I first looked at your pictures, I just did a quick glance, like you and I were talking the other day, and I thought, this is a deadfall. And then I went back and actually really looked at them, and I was like, you know what, there's something weird here going on. I mean, there's one picture, and again, I'll post it on the website, but there's one picture where there's several trees that aren't deadfall trees kind of stacked up like Lincoln logs. I mean, it's the weirdest weirdest thing I've ever seen.
The one you're describing is what I like to say is the fence. Look at that one closer and stuff, and large it as large as you can. And what I'm going to have you look at to see what I'm talking about is look at the tree in the center that's laying on the ground and follow the tree all the way to the back. It's actually on top of a log in the back. These trees are woven. And there's two trees on, it'd be the left-hand side of the picture, that are bent. And these are green trees. They're bent to the right with another green tree that's bent over the top of them. And there's only about 9 logs. And what I like to do when I show that picture off to people and stuff, I go, you tell me which one of these logs went down first. And they stop and look at it. They go, well, this one should have been. I go, but if I enlarge it and show them what's on the backside as far as dead center, that it overlaps the ones in the back. And they go, hey, that's a good trick. How'd you do that?
And I'll post those to the website, Mike. Like I said, those trees look like they'd been placed. I mean, the longer I looked at it, the more I realized this isn't something natural. This isn't something that just happened. These logs were placed here. I wanted to ask you, as you've gone up to this area over the years, I know you had your encounter several years back, but as you've gone up, you've seen these structures. Do you have any theory on why they're doing what they do?
This is my own personal opinion, but I think they're either trail markers on the different, because there's different kinds. Like I said, that one I showed you that's a fence, it's kind of a border. There's ones that look like teepees, and there's other X formations. I think they're family groups or clans or whatever you want to call them that segregate themselves from other ones. I think they're very territorial, but yet at times they'll work together. Because in the area that I go, like I said, there's too many of these things. It is unreal as far as the log structures. And like the gentleman that I took up in July that was really intrigued with them, he goes, when you first look at the pictures and stuff, you think they're old and dead snag of a tree and stuff. And I go, until you're actually standing there and know that those trees don't belong there. Because on these trees, they've been placed there, and you can paw at the ground on where some of these big ones are. And you can put your hand halfway underneath these things, but you can't actually pick them up. They're so big. They're probably, I'm going to take a guess on some of the big ones, they're probably 800, maybe 1,000-pound trees. These are big trees. These are nothing. They'd probably take a crane to put in the locations they are. And this is some of it's in the backwoods. But where I've stumbled across some newer ones, they're probably 10 yards off the road of a Forest Service road, and most people drive by them and don't even know they're there. And I stumbled across them because they're starting to stand out to me as far as like a person that would go out in the forest and maybe be colorblind and be able to see a deer or an elk where somebody else can't. I've seen these things for so long, and I used to use them as a reference point when I was hunting before I started realizing these things don't belong there. And the reason I discovered they actually don't belong there is my son that went with me one time. He goes, "Dad, you realize this tree isn't growing here?" I go, "What?" And he showed me that he can move one of them. And I go, "You're kidding me." And so we started looking around and we started counting them. In one little area alone, there was probably 17 to 20 of these trees. And they're amongst live trees. But what sets them aside from the other trees, and they're, like I said, they're 30 to 40 foot high, is they don't have limbs. And like I was saying, what made this last guy that I took up in July so fascinated with these trees, he goes, "They look like they've been sanded. You can't see where the limbs were. They don't have limbs. The limbs aren't on the ground. And then when you look for the stump's going to be, I think the last time we looked for a stump, it was probably a good 30, 40 yards away. One stump for about 19 trees. So they had to be packed there from a good distance. And I go, "I don't go looking for the stumps. I just look for the trees. Because the more the trees, they get interesting to look at because how they're woven." And I like the puzzles on how they put them together and stuff, because when you look at some of these bigger structures, you think, no one person could do this. This had to take some effort. And the one picture I sent you, Wes, of somebody holding one and having a tape measure around, I also had help from some of my coworkers and stuff, and we put that tree back up in the tree kind of way we found it, and it took three of us to put it there. And I'm no little guy. And the reason I did it is I wanted to see if it would move. I think at different times, if you put something in a location and they don't like it, they're going to move it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd love to come to Idaho and go to that area with you and actually check it out.
I would love to take anybody that want to go. I'm more than willing to show, because I think what needs to happen is more people to be aware of it, because I don't want the area to be closed off. I want people to know what's there and to be able to see it.
Yeah, the pictures definitely intrigued me. I wanted to ask you, when you go up into the area, how often are you getting vocalizations?
Oh, probably 2 out of 4 times on the average.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But I'm going to tell you this, it's not always the same. And I know you don't think they mimic other things, but I'm truly believing they do.
No, I think they mimic.
And I'll tell you another funny story real fast. Is I took a coworker last year, and he's a gentleman from Texas and stuff, and he didn't know how to whistle. So he started humming this little tune off of a movie skit or something. I can't even remember what he was actually humming, but he started humming this thing about 7:30 at night. And I asked him at first, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Well, I don't know how to whistle." And I go, "Okay." No sooner did he stop humming than he got a response of the same tune back to him. But it sounded like a bird. He thought it was a bird. At first, I thought it was a bird. But it was humming or whistling the same tune that he was doing. And I thought, well, parakeets can mimic, crows can mimic, ravens can mimic. But I thought, oh, there's something strange here. And this went on for quite some time. But after about an hour, I was getting annoyed with it. So I picked up a rock because I saw no bird, but this tune kept going on, even if my friend wasn't humming it any longer. And every time I'd go off, I kept telling my friend, "Hey, your buddy's back." He goes, "What? It's just a bird." I go, "Watch this." He goes, "What?" I go, "I'm getting annoyed with this bird because the tune wasn't a catchy little tune or anything. So I picked up a rock and I threw it in the direction where I thought the noise was coming from. The tune stopped. Then it started up in a different direction. There was no bird flying, but it started, the same tune started up in a different direction. So this went on and kept going on, and we went to bed. And it was still going on till about 3, 3:30 in the morning. I, to this day, saw no bird. Don't know for sure if it was something else, but I kind of have a hunch that they were telling us that they were in the area, because I don't know of anything else that would do something like that for that long, because from 7 or 7:30 until 3, 3:30 in the morning, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's strange. Yeah, they definitely, I truly believe that they mimic. I've heard it too many times from several witnesses around the country, and they all kind of have the same general statement on these things mimicking. Sometimes they mimic you calling your dog. Sometimes they mimic you calls. Sometimes they mimic you, you know, they'll mimic your animals. I truly believe that these things mimic. That's a fascinating story. You know, I don't know too many birds out there that would mimic your buddy humming.
Well, I've been told if you split a raven's tongue, they can talk. I truly believe that one. I thought it used to be an old wives' tale, but it's not.
Huh. I'd never heard that.
I haven't done it, but I know some people that have. And they say that's how they talk, is split their tongue.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had no idea. I'd never heard that before. I really want to thank you for coming on the show, Mike. I really do appreciate you sharing the encounter story. I appreciate you sharing the pictures and just opening up about everything out there.
Well, I thank you for putting my story out there and stuff and letting people hear. Like I said, you're more than welcome to come over, or anybody, if they want to get a hold of you, get a hold of me. I'll take you up there. I'm willing to take anybody up there to show them. I'll even send them the pictures, like I sent you some. Just let me know, because I believe in sharing the knowledge that I have in the area that I go into, so other people can maybe see some things and hear some things that I don't always see or hear.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And I want to thank Mike again for coming on the show. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email, wes@sasquatchchronicles.com, and look for the Albert Otzman story next week, everyone. Have a great night. Hope you had a great weekend, and I will see you next time.